You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
We have with us Dato' Zainal Aman Shah, the chief executive of InvestKL, tasked by the government to attract 100 of the world's largest multinational to invest in the Greater Kuala Lumpur region by the year 2020. Dato', welcome back to the grill. We've had these discussions several times through the years since your inception, some 6-7 years ago. So as we enter the last third of your journey, you've attracted about 64% multinationals and investing some 9 billion ringgit into the country with about 10,000 jobs created since then. So you're now entering the last third of your journey. We'd like to start off the discussion in terms of perhaps breaking down the numbers for us. 9 billion ringgit in investments, 10,000 jobs created, about 115,000 ringgit in terms of annual salaries on average for these 10,000 local Malaysian jobs. With the investments created, is it really an instant commitment, or is it investments over a number of years? Just break it down for us if you can, Dato'.
Right. Good morning, Chuang. Thank you for having me back on the show. We released our annual numbers yesterday. You have quoted those numbers correctly. Now, what we are very happy with the investment is the quality of the investments. Our government has said that let's look at these regional establishments with a high degree of innovation. We call it high business innovation and talent. And these investments certainly very services-centric. They have a very high content on the creation of high-skill jobs, innovation, and so on. Therefore, we are satisfied so far. Of course, there's a long way to go. And we're also particularly pleased because the local content, the interaction with our SMEs, for example, the collaboration that they do with our universities is very high in terms of the our direction and in terms of what they have done. So content-wise, very good.
But in terms of the investment numbers cited, and sometimes Malaysia suffers from information or statistics overload. So what does 9 billion ringgit mean since 2011? Is this real cold hard cash? Is this in-kind cash? Is this cash or money investments, capital spend over a number of years, 5 or 10 years? What does it mean?
Out of the 9 billion ringgit committed and approved, 36% have already been realised. This is a very important data.
Money deposited in local Malaysian banks?
OPEX.
Okay. Spend.
Spend. These are services in nature. Therefore, when you look at CAPEX, the CAPEX content is low, but the OPEX, the business spend, is very high.
Do they spend? Sterling dollars translated into the ringgit Malaysia, then spent on local salaries, etc.
That's right. Salaries, office rental, usage of ancillary services. So really money coming into our economy.
What about skills transfer, this whole much vaunted notion of skills transfer from highly skilled engineers or what have you into Malaysia?
When we look at the data on jobs, 9,300 jobs committed, 56% are already on payroll. And out of that 56%, which is about 4,000 over jobs, 83% are locals and the balance is expats. So what does that mean? These companies, when they come in, they will bring in the expats, obviously, because they have the best practices of the company, they may have the experience and so on. But the need to find very good local talent is high on their agenda. Therefore, it is an opportunity for our local talent to work in these multinationals on regional roles.
What's their feedback in terms of the pipeline? Say if they don't have someone of a certain skill or certain experience, they will have to nurture that talent with a long runway and, to quote a Jack Welch phrase. Do they find that pipeline here necessarily?
Depends. Depends on what kind of skill set. If it is very specialized skill set, then there has to be a lot of transfer of knowledge, a lot of training. And this is what we encourage the multinationals to do, have a program in place. Sometimes you can just hire them, hire the talent, whether they are experienced talent or even from the universities. But, if you recognize the activities that the MNCs are doing, really very high innovation, analytics, supply chain, in a regional establishment, you have things like brand management, planning, decision making. So the skill set requirement has changed over the years. It's no longer just a typical, say, back office and, that simplistic kind of role.
So the proposition that Kuala Lumpur offers offers to the rest of the world is this BILT, the Business Innovation Livability Talents Proposition. And I think the killer app here for KL is this principal hub arrangement whereby you offer regional headquarters for multinationals, and they set up, they do procurement, finance, admin, and what have you. And they get a preferential tax rate, and they get certain value chain benefits as well. How has that worked out in the context of where Singapore sits, in the context of where Bangkok sits, in the context of where Jakarta sits, and all these, aggressive measures by our neighbours?
Yes, the principal hub scheme replaced the old operational headquarters and the old scheme. It was designed really to attract a higher degree of quality in terms of investments. So it has worked out well, but it is a work in progress because there are some other aspects with in terms of taxation that we have to fine-tune. For example, when we want to attract more intellectual property, how does that fit vis-a-vis the principal hub? If we want to look at more attracting even more regional type activities. So it's a good start that we introduce the principal hub. However, there is what we call a version 2 or version 3, which we have to fine-tune in order to attract even more high-quality investments.
Well, here's a conundrum, because in Malaysia, the tax framework is constantly in a state of flux. And we've got GST at a consumer level, and then we've got all these withholding tax structures that have to be structured. Inland Revenue and the Ministry of Finance are obviously the go-to people. Do you think those two entities are doing a good enough, a bang-up job in terms of the framework?
It is a work in progress, Chang, because we have to constantly have a dialogue with them. The tax folks have their job to do. The colleagues at Central Bank also have their job to do. But in order to fine-tune the proposition, not just principal hub, other incentives also that we offer as a country, we have to constantly articulate what is it that we are trying to do, what is it that we are trying to attract, and ultimately to prove that when these schemes are introduced, it indeed brings the right kind of value back into our economy.
So at a macro level, corporation tax is said to be among the highest. Malaysia's is said to be among the highest in the region, and individual tax also among the highest in the region when compared to, say, Hong Kong or Singapore. But not necessarily these are the things that your investees or potential investees look at, because they look at the nitty-gritty withholding tax structures, double taxation reliefs and all these things. Is that true? Or is it just an amalgam of all these things?
Well, let's separate the two. If you look at corporate tax, our government is very generous when it comes to incentives for the right kind of activities. Right. When it comes to personal, you mentioned about personal tax. Of course, you've got to take into consideration the livability factor here. The cost here is a lot lower than many other destinations. So as a package, as a whole, whether it is to do with personal or whether it is corporate, as a package, we remain very attractive. But as I mentioned just now, we constantly have to fine-tune this proposition.
Well, the sectors which are important to the Malaysian government are the same sectors which are important to the Singaporean government and the Vietnamese government and the Thai government and the Indonesian government. And we've got very proactive leadership there in terms of attracting the best investments into their country. So in biotech, in healthcare, in financial services, in manufacturing or high-level technology manufacturing, these are the same names that everybody is chasing. Where do we sit on the appeal ladder?
Our ecosystem is very strong. When I say ecosystem, I'm talking about the infrastructure that we have, the talent pool that we have, the various collaboration, the SMEs that are present here. The ease of doing business, by and large, is very good here. The feedback that we get from regional establishments is that as a base, they can get things done here. So it's a good start. They participate even in local projects. If we take the oil and gas sector, for example, there are projects like Pengerang, so they participate in Pengerang Rapid, users as a base, and then they expand into the region. So ecosystem-wise is one of our competitive edge.
On a comparative basis, though, Dato, when you look at, say, Singapore, which is obviously the Champions League of FDI targets, I mean, they attract something like 25 to 30 billion US dollars a year. Mm-hmm. We've done 9 billion ringgit in the last 6 years. So obviously not a like-for-like comparison. Mm-hmm. And, Kuan Yew has always made a big deal of the rule of law, intellectual property protection. Obviously the legal system there is a big plus for them. Where do we sit on that particular segment?
We're moving in the right direction, because now,
how far away do you think we've got to go?
The gap is it's difficult to say, because every country is very competitive. But we're moving in the right direction because we're embracing things like Industry 4.0, digital, high services. So therefore, if you compare 10 years ago against now, the level of the quality and the content of investments, whether it's manufacturing or whether it's services, the level of the quality, the content, innovation level is very high.
We are talking to Dato' Zainal Aman Shah, the chief executive of InvestKL, of course tasked by the government to attract 100 of the world's largest MNCs to invest in Greater Kuala Lumpur by 2020. After this, Dato', we're going to go macro and we're going to go global. We'll talk about President Trump, we're going to talk about Brexit, we're going to talk about the ringgit. Dato' Zainal Aman Shah, the chief executive of InvestKL, with us on the grill this morning. And of course, Dato', you've got to get 100 of the world's largest MNCs to KL by the year 2020. That's in 3 years' time. You're about 65%, 64% of the way there. Now, when we look at the 2016 numbers, most of the investees in the last year came from Europe. 44%, okay? And Europe is obviously where Brexit happened in June with a referendum in the UK. We've also got upcoming elections in France, Germany and Italy. And there's a wave of populism, settling over the entire continent. Is that a big catalyst for, European corporations wanting to leave those shores and come into high-growth regions like ASEAN?
Partially. However, the main reason that they look at is the lure of ASEAN. These companies, no matter what happens domestically, they have to deliver shareholder value. So where are they going to grow? And ASEAN remains a very popular destination for them. You know the numbers on ASEAN, the 630 million population and 2.5 trillion USD GDP and so on. So ASEAN is a big story for them. So we constantly promote Kuala Lumpur and Malaysia as an ideal location for them for the ASEAN market.
From a geographic perspective, yes, because Malaysia sits, or Kuala Lumpur sits, at the center of ASEAN. But then you've got people like Vietnam with their 80 million people and their low-cost structure, manufacturing bent. You've got the Bangkoks of this world with their also about similar population, about 80 million people, but they've got a very they've got a fantastic timeline and the master plan there. And of course, Singapore is Singapore, and you've got Jakarta with Jokowi. And his initiatives, when you go into the beauty parade and you say to them Kuala Lumpur is it, what do they say, the Europeans specifically?
Well, as a base with a good track record, that's very important to them. When they look at the list of companies that have been here for many, many years and have been successful as a establishment, not just for the Malaysian market, but also for the regional market. We've got a very strong track record. You combine that with our ecosystem. You combine that with the quality of life that they have here. Recently when the MRT was launched, that was a massive game changer where people once upon a time said so much traffic jams and so on, but MRT, LRT and all that is going to help. And of course, the rankings continue to be quite steady vis-a-vis competitiveness, the cost of doing business. So that's a clear edge that we have. Now, of course, then they can tap off the other countries in the region that you mentioned. Every country has got its own strength. But as a strategic base, where would they put that? And that's where we continue to pitch KL as a location.
KL also is Malaysia, and Malaysia is obviously the ringgit Malaysia. And the ringgit Malaysia is under siege, as we all know, something down like 40% over the last 3 years, which is a boon for foreign corporations. But the latest policies from Bank Negara in terms of the non-deliverable forwards, in terms of the export rule, the 75-25 rules, that's thrown a spanner into the works in terms of how they plan. How are foreign corporations, when you talk to them and considering Kuala Lumpur, digesting these policy measures?
You're right. Technically speaking, a weak ringgit should be a boon for the investors. What we're doing vis-a-vis the policies that you mentioned and the entities like Central Bank and Inland Revenue is to continuously have a dialogue with them. They've introduced some measures which they believe is important for the economy. However, the MNCs have fed back. There are a number of cases where they may have unique requirements and it may affect them adversely, for example. The good thing is that these things are not cast in stone. So the dialogue continues. It's ongoing right now. And it shows that our government, although something has been introduced, that they're willing to sit down, talk and fine-tune and perhaps meet halfway maybe with some of these requirements. But continuing clarity and business friendliness is very important for us.
So decision, I mean, the assumption on our front is that decision making must take longer than expected, because back home in the US, you've got Donald Trump's and his uncertainty over his tax framework. Mm. Then you've got the European situation. And then you've got in Malaysia where the tax framework is also in a state of flux. So I guess, you know, from an investment perspective, corporations, they must be taking longer than normal. Is that a truism?
It's true. The evaluation cycle is long. Companies are waiting on a direction on the tax codes from the US. The elections that you mentioned, these are all uncertain factors globally. But what remains high on their agenda is, as I mentioned, where are they going to grow? What activities can they do which is nearer to the marketplace in ASEAN? You know, these are not investment decisions just to offshore something just purely because of cost. It's to get nearer to the market, maybe a follow the sun kind of a strategy to be much closer to their customers. So they look at ASEAN, they look at this region, and this is where they must continue to invest and be very, very close to the market to remain very competitive. And I'm sure you're going to ask me about China also. You know, China is very aggressive now. So how can they respond to that and perhaps leverage off the Chinese move into the region?
Dato' Zainal Aman Shah, the Chief Executive of InvestKL, is with us on The Grill this morning. Now, before we talk about China, Dato', we still have some issues with Europe and the US. Now, of course, we know that from the European side, there's a push factor. And from the US side, there's a pull factor from Donald Trump's measures and his plans to make America great again. So I guess it kind of bears out in the numbers, because most of your investments are from Europe and I guess less so from America. And then there's also the uncertainty over the tax inversion framework, which is under scrutiny now, because that was a framework that was being used to great benefit by foreign corporations, specifically American corporations. But now that whole framework is being looked at as well with greater scrutiny. What's the latest update on that front?
Actually, if you look at the portfolio of companies, we have quite a substantial amount from the US as well. US and also Europe has dominated the number of multinationals that we dealt with.
Correct. The notion of being close to the customer, and of course ASEAN is a 630 million population customer.
Yes.
But if America wants to bring the customers back to the US, does that not thwart your targets?
Well, traditionally, what we always look at is, what are these companies, what do they want to do here? We look at the substance. As I said, the main concern about the US is jobs offshoring somewhere because of a low-cost proposition. Now, when we look at these investments, they are very high in terms of substance, because this topic about base erosion, profit shifting, a company just shifting their profit into a location, we're very, very concerned and very careful about that. So when we engage with multinationals, whether they're from US, Europe, any part of the world, we will always ask them the question, what is it that you'd like to do here? And then we'll match it according to the strength of our ecosystem. Some companies don't need an incentive yet. Some companies will ask for an incentive upfront, some will ask for it later. So the substance aspect is high on our agenda, very important in terms of passing the test on taxation and also in terms of benefits to our ecosystem.
What's on their wish list? What did they tell you when you ask a question of corporations? How do they answer you? What are the top three ones?
Well, the list is very long.
Yeah, so that's why top three.
They look at stability. They look at quality of life. Livability is very high on their agenda. They look at how pro-business is our government. So entities like us, we constantly engage with them, and they like that because there's a lot of transparency, a lot of discussion, a lot of dialogue. So they like that about us, which they may not necessarily get in other locations.
So the tax framework and the clarity of the tax framework could be something which, you know, could be improved. And of course, the Singapore government have got this down to a science. On the livability front as well, they have, you know, obviously all their concepts, and on, of course, on the talent front as well. So when you talk to investees, especially on the tax framework, what kind of clarity, you know, to break it down and to make it real for the Joe Garnies of this world and the Ministry of Finance, what kind of clarity is specifically needed?
The actual activity that they want to embark on here, what's their plan? How many headcount are they going to have? When they say innovation, are we talking about real IP in terms of economic IP, bringing the economic IP here? when they talk about partnerships, when they talk about grants, okay, what do you need it for? What are you going to do? So getting the substance right is extremely important. You know, tax authorities globally are on a bit of a rampage. They are looking at companies globally. They're very wary of inversion type structures. So we know that. And when we engage with multinationals, knowing and understanding the substance is extremely important.
What about this whole notion of Chinification, the Chinification of Malaysia? It's a concept which you brought up earlier. You know, 144 billion ringgit worth of investments in just 1 year alone. I mean, that obviously, you know, your 9 billion pales into a shadow. And of course, you know, in terms of the value system, in terms of the value chain, in terms of how business is done, how does the China phenomenon, you know, translate into when you talk to the Europeans and the North Americans?
Well, China and their Belt and Road Initiative is very good for us. However, what we need to do is to really engage with the companies and ensure that they localize their operations as much as possible. And they're very receptive to that. They can't do everything. They can't get all the talent from China and bring it across here, for example. We've got very good...
Well, we're actually hearing quite the opposite. We're hearing that they're going to bring over the entire cadre of people and not hire local. But I mean, obviously, that's a notion.
Absolutely. In reality, what's happening is that, you know, our talent today with a multilingual capability, multicultural capability, if they wish to expand, let's say, even into the Middle East, it's very obvious in the past few days, you can see the relationship between ourselves and the Saudis is very, very strong. And the Chinese companies know that they can leverage off this. So engaging with them, as I said, localizing their operations, using local talent, local raw material is very important. So when we look at this as an opportunity of a glass half full, as opposed to glass half empty, this is definitely an upside for us.
What about this whole, you know, the whole sovereignty tussle in the South China Sea and the Nine Dash Line? You know, does that enter corporations, mindsets when they think about whether Malaysia poses a sovereign country risk or not?
Yeah, it doesn't come into the equation. I mean, multinationals are aware. They do their risk assessment vis-a-vis the politics in the region, politics locally. They do their assessment. So that's not been an issue.
Aramco's $7 billion investment in Pengerang bears mentioning because, you know, the energy price slump has been quite vigorous and vehement. And the Petronas capex, you know, largesse was obviously a big boon in the past, but no longer there, you know, for corporations in oil and gas wanting to be near the Daddy Warbucks of the country. How is that complexion altering, if at all?
This scenario, on one hand, has been a bit of an upside for us because we've seen companies, in order to get a quick improvement on their bottom line, they've shifted their operations from other locations into KL. There are quite a number of companies that have done that. Now, when we look at the oil and gas sector, yes, there has been a consolidatory kind of scenario. The Aramco project is very good because it is a major boost for Pengerang. And many of the companies that we've talked to who are participating in Pengerang have decided to make KL as the regional hub. So that's the anchor, that's the base. But they then look at opportunities in the region as well.
Pengerang is downstream, though. What about, have you seen any uptick in interest from upstream players?
Upstream is a little bit soft right now.
Yeah.
But companies who still have a good order book, they can still sustain. But upstream is challenging.
Okay, well, just a couple last questions on the entity itself, InvestKL. I mean, we've had Pemandu now kind of like having done their jobs and, you know, Dato' Sri Idris Jala, you know, moving more into the private sector. What about yourselves? You've got 1/3 of your job left. You've got 3 years to do it. Probably you can probably get there, all things being equal. Mm. What's next for InvestKL and what's next for you?
We're going to do what has been tasked to us. We've got to do it very well. We work very closely with the Ministry of International Trade, with our FT Ministry, with DBKL. We've got to continue bringing companies here, which is our main agenda. So if we do that well, then there's a good future for us, hopefully.
All right. Well, Dato', thank you for joining us. Of course, good luck with the last third of your journey and look forward to talking to you when you complete it. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Shah.
That was Dato' Zainal Aman Shah, the Chief Executive of InvestKL, tasked by the government to attract 100 of the world's largest corporations to invest in KL by the year 2020, BFM 89.9.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.